Welcome everyone, my name's Az. I'm the CMO for Mercolamia, where we work with some of the best brands to drive meaningful progress by transforming customer experiences. We've got some top thought leaders here today, so welcome to our podcast discussing all the things that you need to deliver customer experience management. This is Connected.
I'm Chris Dobson. I'm VP of Customer Strategy at Merkle.
And I'm Alice Walker. I am VP of Media Planning and Strategy at Merkle.
About a year ago, in May 2021, we did a webinar around changing behaviours and your audience in the context of COVID. The pandemic was at its early stages, although it really didn't feel like it. People and brands were working out how to react. We had panic buying, we had emotional stress, we had confusion. And also elements of joy as hope fluttered by and community spirit rose. During the chat, we spoke about three things: people, how are we feeling and what are we doing, both in regards to consumerism and our changing habits and personal and society and social lives, brands, how are they impacted and what are they saying or spending, and brand strategy, so how should they react and where should they focus. So today we're actually going to look at things as they are now versus a year ago. We never imagined we'd still be in the same place. So how have things changed? What are people feeling and doing? How are they spending their money? And what are brands doing? How are they changing what they offer people? And what's the impact to advertising? And what do we think is here to stay going forward? So we've got a few stats, the odd personal anecdote, and hopefully some really interesting things you listeners can take away. So we're going to start with people. So really, how are they feeling and what are they doing? So a year ago, we did some really interesting stuff. We created a COVID tracker, and we found that around about 45% of people had feelings of fear at the start of March, but that shifted. They had that emotional shift to joy, about 35% sadness. There was still fear in there, but also anger in late April. But the conversation was really driven by health and helping. So it evolved in sort of its approach and its context. So Alice, what about now? What are you seeing now these days?
It's been an interesting journey. I guess absolutely the dominating fear at the beginning was really fear and anxiety. But because of all of the community initiatives that were coming out at the time, there was this sort of underpinning feeling of joy and community spirit. So there was almost this kind of paradoxical relationship between anxiety and happiness. A year later, many of us are still feeling a lot of fear and sadness. So actually, I mean, it really hasn't dropped too much at all. There's still widespread concern despite the vaccination rollout and, you know, the various sort of relieving of lockdown, especially in the UK. You know, in the UK, the vaccination program has seen much success. So anxiety is dropping, but lagging countries where the vaccination programs have not been successful, or indeed the virus is still spreading, naturally you would expect to see anxiety increasing. But those feelings aside, I think the most interesting trend that has come out of the past year, when we've seen such a huge change to everything about our lives, is actually the impact of mental health. And that's just arising from, you know, this experience that we've gone through, this collective experience, and those feelings of anxiety have taken on a whole new meaning. So anxiety is not really exclusive to the fear of falling sick. Depression, restlessness, these are all common feelings at mass. And languishing, this term that is trending at the moment. I read a brilliant article last week on the New York Times, and they're actually calling this the dominant emotion of 2021. So this is not really burnout, it's not quite depression or hopelessness, but it's generally just this lack of joy and a feeling of aimlessness. And I mean, this article was so powerful, I really recommend everyone reading it. It resonated with me so much, because so many people are struggling with the emotional long haul of the pandemic. Despite whether they've been personally affected by illness, there is still this feeling existing, really much more related to depression and mental health. And as this, you know, intense fear and grief of the last year faded, it's sort of left this stale sense of where am I now? What now? And when we look at sentiment in social listening around COVID, so those trackers that Chris has just mentioned, there's actually this emerging sort of neutral response. So it's just a sort of meh or blah feeling. And you know, that really penetrates so many aspects of our life, whether that's work or whether that's our personal and social lives. And it's super interesting actually to consider that, you know, COVID, the virus, it really had its most significant impact on the elderly, but completely conversely, the mental well-being impact is at its most profound in the younger demographics. So 18 to 24 year olds are really affected by these feelings, as are the 25 to 34 year old age group. And actually, you know, the older age groups of over 65s actually report the lowest impact to mental health. So it's really interesting to see this new dynamic emerging, and actually the people in society that are most likely affected by these long lasting emotions are younger people.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see definitely the meh sort of thing, that you get up, it's the same day, you know, no matter what. And also the 18, 24, my daughter's 20, one of my daughters is at university, and she's done well, but she struggled, you know, and it's because it should be their time.
And it's really absolutely.
Hard. It's just a hold, isn't it? It's really interesting.
And the monotony of life that has existed around us all has really, really taken its toll. And, you know, I think in the early days where we did see these very strong feelings emerge, there was almost an element of excitement and drama in what was happening. And now that has disappeared. There's just been this really prolonged period of time where your daughter, for example, has missed out on such a huge part of her life. And I'm not surprised that that is affecting people's mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But the next thing we looked at was really about digital consumption. So, you know, what was sort of happening like a year ago?
I mean, unsurprisingly, online, our digital consumption was through the roof. Social media engagements had increased by 60%. We were all spending our time on YouTube. I think absolutely unsurprisingly, everyone went online. Our digital usage was up by about 70%. We were all really engaging in our social networks. Again, that was up at around 60%. We were spending a lot of time on YouTube. We were spending a lot of time on WhatsApp. And of course, no one is a stranger to a Zoom call these days. I think digital transformation was absolutely the dominating conversation for UK business leaders. And you know, the pandemic has undoubtedly acted as a catalyst here. So not only speeding up the way businesses were thinking about digital and their digital propositions, but actually speeding up consumers' digital adoption and introducing lots of new trends at a rate that we absolutely could never have predicted. Much of this was happening, you know, the shift to digitization is not exactly a new conversation, but absolutely the pandemic in here and exacerbated that tenfold, if not more. Some of this has stabilized, but there are, you know, absolutely still reports of increases in the digital behaviours right across the board, right across demographics. So behaviours that were typically synonymous with a younger demographic, you know, that's definitely not the case anymore. Yeah, everyone is online, your mother, your grandmother as well. People are still checking their social networks more. They're accessing more information and content online, and we're shopping more online. And we're even educating ourselves more online. So yes, these changes are absolutely still happening, and they are absolutely here to stay. So I think we actually were completely on the money with that one. You know, that these changes were initially forced upon us, but I think now we're actually finding that they are completely preferential to us. So we're happy to be more digital.
My mum's a great example of that. She's 88. She's in a care home. I mean, it's horrible the last year because they've been stuck. My mum and dad, though, barely be able to see them. But she's got a tablet. She's on Facebook. Mm. And as when I saw her the other day, she's going, it's been absolutely brilliant because she's managed to feel that she's been in touch with people. So I think that's just a really interesting sort of shift change that my mum, she'd never used Facebook, but now she's, you know, she actually sends emojis.
And I bet there was, you know, an almost a reluctance on her behalf before the pandemic, but she's been put in a situation where, well, none of us had any choice but to communicate on these devices. And now you're almost finding joy in that and think, and I think that there's probably a lot of people out there thinking, why wasn't I doing this before?
Yeah, definitely. So in terms of new hobbies, so last year we saw a there's quite a lot of stuff really happening. We found that more people were cooking with the family. Watching TV was up there. 62% of people were saying they were watching more telly during the first lockdown. But we also saw a change in the hobbies in quarantine. So baking came up there. Sourdough was one of the biggest things. Getting flour was almost impossible. We found DIY. Everyone was doing DIY. Still, our learning a language was coming through. I tried to learn French for about 2 weeks and then I didn't. And also the home gym, you know, again, a bit like flour, getting weights was almost impossible. You couldn't buy them for love and money. But Alice, what about now? What's happening sort of a year later?
I love that point around flour. I guess for a while, I was actually still living in London at the time. We've since moved back out to Essex, actually. And that was very much a decision motivated by lockdown. So I have completely changed and uprooted my life since the pandemic, which, you know, is not even an unfamiliar story at the moment. But when we were still in London, we had this ongoing arrangement with my neighbour whichever one of us saw flour first, we would just buy all these different types of flours that we could bake. And, you know, admittedly, my husband and I didn't really partake in the baking side of it, but my neighbour was a fantastic baker and he just used to leave all these yummy treats on the doorstep for us. So I really did enjoy that while that was happening. And you know, people are still doing things like that. I actually recently took part in an online cooking session that was hosted by Merkle, actually. So people are definitely still getting involved in those types of activities. I actually have a few unsuccessful stories related to online cooking dinner parties with friends, which didn't really ever turn out to be successful. So I think some of that is disappearing, but it is still happening. People have definitely been investing a lot more in their mental well-being, looking after themselves, whatever that means for them as individuals, whether it's listening to music or, to your point, Chris, around having these personal development goals related to exercising or healthy eating or learning. These things are still happening, but they have very much waned. It's kind of like when you make one of those very big New Year's Eve commitments to yourselves, and you promise yourself this is the year of change, but by the end of January you've completely reverted back to normal. So maybe not quite as significant as that, but we definitely are reducing the types of, or I guess reducing the amount of diversification we have seen in that sort of hobby area. Interestingly, the number one new habit, the thing that we have really been spending our time on during the lockdown months, is actually spending money. You know, e-commerce has become more embedded in our lives now, and it's actually ranking the number one activity people do more than they did pre-pandemic.
When you talk about e-commerce, that was one of the big things, wasn't it, last year? There was a great quote from Dave Lewis, the Tesco CEO, and he was talking about the weekly shop being back in fashion. And what we're seeing is there was sort of a record low number of trips, I think it was about 14 to the supermarket in sort of a 12-week period. But we found that the average basket size was going to be at the highest levels sort of ever. And actually, a year ago, we didn't really see there was any reason why that would stop, because it was just a fundamental change in behaviour. And we did, you know, obviously stockpiling, we talked about loo rolls and other stuff, was a big factor. But there was also sort of wider consumption. You know, we found that things around personal care and tissues, naturally they're sort of coming through. Canned meats, so stuff which would stay on the shelves, was into there, and beans and pasta. There was a rise in vitamins, again, sort of linked in, obviously, with the pandemic. So there was that sort of shift. And, you know, again, we found it as a family. You know, we started to shop bigger and less often a year ago. And I was talking to my wife the other day, and we still continue to do that. It's like once a week with the odd little shop. And we've found that, haven't we? I think we've seen that across the piece. That's still the case now.
Yeah, absolutely. We were bang on there, and I agree with you, Chris. We have completely changed the way we shop as well. I was very much a, you know, nip to the local shop on the way home to pick up whatever it is I needed for dinner that night, and we do not do that anymore. Mm. And no one else is either. We have very much reverted back to this sort of, you know, the once a week big shop. FMCG have, you know, there's been huge growth in that category. I think before the pandemic it was forecast to be, you know, about 2%, and it ended up being, you know, four times higher than that, more around 10%. thankfully, the stockpiling trend has you know, completely gone. But we are still buying more food, but we're eating more at home. You know, a lot of people are working from home, so we need more food at home. We're still seeing huge rises in home care products and hygiene and cleanliness, to your point, Chris, related entirely still to the pandemic. I think one of the interesting things that come out of it is because we're not seeing as much social interaction because, you know, we have been for a while much more confined to our homes. There are some declines in the health and beauty sector, which had previously been a very fast growing sector. So that is a bit of a change in the types of things that we're buying. But, you know, generally we are shopping online. To our previous point around this shift to digital, that is very much the case with grocery shopping as well. So there have been absolutely extraordinary changes to the way we shop, and these are absolutely here to stay. We're seeing fewer shopper trips. It's actually about 2% less. So all of the growth, that 10% growth, is all coming from shoppers putting more volume in their baskets and actually just broadening the range of categories they buy from. So yeah, absolutely. Nail on the head with that one. Very much here to stay. I think it's a really interesting point, especially when we look at FMCG, is that at the time when the pandemic hit, but also really throughout all of 2020, there was a lot of talk around a shift to local shopping. There was a lot of support local initiatives, and you know, there were fantastic initiatives, and I think I personally know a lot of people that really supported them, as I did myself, and do continue to do so. But interestingly, when we look at the macro data assets, most of that growth has actually come from larger brands. So people have been pretty quick to return to the big familiar brands that they were used to shopping with pre-pandemic.
Yeah, I could see that. So we're talking about big stuff, but big brands, but how about the big stuff, you know, the sort of treat yourself? I think we did see, didn't we, a year ago, that naturally people were delaying those purchases. So delaying stuff on flights and cars and luxury goods, it was really starting to stop for a time. But then, you know, I think we then started to see a change again. You know, it was more that treat yourself. I've been terrible. Bikes and golf clubs. You know, that's that. Really, last year I've suddenly bought stuff that I wouldn't normally buy, just because you want to feel actually a little bit better, and you know, have something which I don't know, just takes you out of that meh moment.
Absolutely, just a little something to boost your mood, and if that means golf clubs to you, Chris, then so be it.
Until you get on the golf course, then the mood disappears.
It's an interesting point. You know, I share similar stories. There have been some handbag purchases in the last year that might not have happened otherwise, and it similarly was to just have a moment of joy for myself. And you know, I don't even necessarily regret those purchases. I think we needed them. And they did give us something that we weren't able to get anywhere else at the time because of the lack of everything else in our lives. But it is interesting that there are so many of these stories around, oh, well, I just treated myself to that bag or that set of golf clubs that I've been after for a while. Because, you know, there was a lot of anxiety around spend. There was a lot of, I guess, economic unrest and fear for what financial future looked like. So there was this, you know, this undercurrent of anxiety around spending. But as we have been discussing, spending has been at an all-time high. So again, this sort of contradiction in sentiment and behaviours. I think, you know, naturally, no one will be surprised to see that spending on flights and holidays are still down. You know, much of that is forced upon us. We're spending more on smaller things. So spending on things like, I mean, you know, the sort of Friday night in and the cook at home meal, that has taken on new value for people. You know, you might spend a little bit more on food and wine or food and alcohol than we would have done previously. And because we have, you know, we're not able to do that outside, we're just bringing the spend into our homes. So yes, that we're still seeing big delays in big purchases. But you know, as I mentioned, much of this is forced upon us, so we don't really have a lot of choice in those categories. But we're definitely not still delaying spend on things like tech, household, and luxury goods.
Yes, yeah, so it's almost like a little trade up, isn't there? So the big stuff's dropped off, the kind of mid stuff's slightly traded up. But so that's consumers in terms of what they're doing, how they're spending, how they're reacting. But what about brands? I mean, what a year ago in terms of what were they spending, and have we seen that shift at all again from their sort of activity?
So naturally, I think the initial reaction from brands was to reduce spending. There was a lot of cost saving, again, for, you know, that fear and anxiety around financial impact. Of course, it's not exclusive to people. That very much resonates with big brands and corporates as well. So advertising spend at a general level definitely dropped. Unsurprisingly, we saw spend almost completely removed from out-of-home environments. So traditional ad formats really were the worst impacted. So 2020 was a very tough period for the ad industry. I guess towards the end of the year, we did see some recovery. And because of all of that change in people behaviour that we're seeing in this shift to digital, naturally brands wanted to be where people are. So a lot of that spend has ended up in digital. So there were some sort of H2 really strong gains, actually. But, you know, unfortunately for people in traditional advertising, they have seen a huge hit. The market has been completely dominated by digital, actually accounted for, you know, over 70% of total media spend last year. So a big increase there.
That's huge, isn't it? That's really big.
Yeah, and we are starting to see some bounce back, especially as, you know, that some of the pandemic restrictions are easing. I don't think we're going to see a return to pre-pandemic levels of spend in some of those traditional environments anytime soon because of these digital habits that are entirely anticipated to stick around. We're going to see spend remain in digital for years to come, and actually we're now seeing forecasts published where you know, the next 4 to 5 years the spend in digital is higher than the forecasted spend in digital is higher than it was a couple of years ago. So definitely a huge shift in advertising spend.
Yeah, I think it's interesting as well. So as well as the spend, yeah, I think the main thing that we saw last year was how the brands were responding as well. Were they being empathetic? I think we said the CEO was actually not the chief empathy officer. Mm. That type of approach. And there was some really interesting stuff out there. I think we had some stuff from Opinion Research, which looked at how people were viewing brands that responded to the crisis. There was some interesting stuff from the Edelman Trust Barometer Research as well, which is showing that about 64% of consumers stated that the way that brand would react at that moment in time is having a massive impact on their future purchase. And the way that they spoke as well, you know, tonality was key. It wasn't about being too humorous or lighthearted. And that's a really, really hard thing to sort of get right, I think, you know, to make sure that you're sort of spot on with those. And I've looked through sort of a few different things now just to see actually what is happening. There was some stuff from a study by Axios Harris, and they looked at I think it's a US study, so we have to take it into the context. But they've looked at things from the current day, and they found that entertainment companies has fallen from their peak popularity. And as the world reopens, the bubble has proven to be unsustainable. So Netflix and those type of things. Yeah, there is some decline in terms of e-commerce and other elements. And there's some sort of reputational loss as well, certain gains. So Pfizer and others have actually come through. And also we've seen brands such as Patagonia from this study, which, you know, they're not necessarily to do with the pandemic, but their positioning and their push towards sustainability has been fascinating. And we're seeing them actually sort of really raise within the marketplace. Again, sort of we looked at the Edelman Trust Barometer Research, and there's a few sort of things which are coming through. We're finding that particularly in the UK, I mean, trust in the businesses is around about 50%. And that's actually 61% globally. So slightly lower. But you know, when we think about it, there's probably sort of three things which I think both that study and ourselves, you know, would pull forward. You know, it's from a business perspective, they're seeing that the CEOs need to act on the issues, think about sustainability, think about the way that they can start to be, said, more empathetic towards their audience. Lead with those flags, you know, talk straight. Make sure that you're addressing people's fears. I think that they're still going to be there. Coming back to your mental health point from earlier on, again, brands shouldn't be fearful about not talking about things and actually listening to the consumer and sort of reacting. And as part of that, making sure that you're providing that trustworthy content. So having things which people believe, having that reliability. There's been so many stats and facts. We've given a lot today out there. But how do you make sure that, again, as brands, people believe in you, people empathize with you, and therefore people want to grow and spend with you and stay valuable to you. But in terms of sort of the sort of leading with the heart and consumers making that sort of emotional decisions, are we finding sort of anything else? What sort of other elements are coming through?
I mean, absolutely, you know, spot on. Consumers are making much more emotional biased decisions. I actually think this is fabulous. I mean, we are looking at brands for different reasons. We want them to provide purpose and meaning beyond commodity and beyond the selling of product. And that it definitely is here to stay. There has been, you know, so much, I guess, value assessment changes when it comes to how we choose to invest our money during the pandemic. And now, whilst we're emerging from the pandemic, much of that redefining of how brands can be valuable to us is sticking. We, you know, where once things like price would have really dominated decision making, for some time now, we're actually starting to see, as you mentioned, Chris, things like trust and empathy, that, you know, they are re-emerging as the most resonating factors in brand choice. So that, you know, you're touching on points of sort of accountability. And this is really more true than ever when we look at how we engage with brands and the relationship that we expect from brands. And this absolutely means more now than it ever really has done before. And it spans more than just marketing and communication. So during the pandemic, we really did look at brands to be seen to be doing the right thing in regards to how they were helping support during the pandemic. But this has gone beyond just the pandemic now. You know, social impact causes, we're expecting brands to support the things that we support and actually act on our behalf in many cases. So we want brands to be change advocates. In the same way that we look to lead our own lives, but there is this interesting interplay between where perhaps as consumers, we might not have the means to act upon some of the things that we believe in. We actually expect brands to do that for us and potentially will not spend money with them or move away from them if we don't see them to be behaving in a way that aligns entirely with our social and moral principles. And I actually think that that is lovely.
It's a great thing for us, I think, as well. Yeah, because we believe that actually really understanding that consumer and taking them to that next level and developing that total customer experience, it's just key. It's not just about selling, is it? It's about so much more.
No, and it's not even just about customers. You know, we're looking at brands not just for the way they treat us as customers, but you know, whether the way that they position themselves in their communications is actually resonating and is true in everything that it is that they do. So brand behaviors needs to mean their operational behaviors, their logistics, their supply chain, their marketing decisions. So they can't just be seen to be, they can't just talk about doing the right thing. They have to live and breathe doing the right thing. So transparency in brands has taken on a whole new meaning. This means, you know, treating your employees fairly as much as it does providing that great product and customer experience that you touched on.
From my side, yeah, there's lots of obvious things. It could be more home working. Hopefully that will continue, but with a bit more balance. We've sort of mentioned about the customer. I think there's going to be massively increasing expectations around ease making things happen for me. So it's, you know, price is important, other things are important, but just make it easy. You mentioned the move away from city living. You've done it yourself, Alison. I think that's the comment to that. Sustainability. We spoke about Patagonia and others. There was a great study by Dentsu which showed that 2/3 of UK consumers by 2030 won't buy products with a negative environmental impact. So that's naturally going to be a big thing. But I'm actually going to go for connections with friends. We've sort of spoke about it a lot today, despite you're not very successful dinner parties. You know, there's been people using Zoom more. There's been less fear and apprehension about video conferences. Spoke about my mum and others, that older person, you know, that take up. And also that innovative uses. We've done wine tasting, for example, which has been really good fun. So I think that will be it, that ability to connect easily with friends, even if they're around the corner or very, you know, many miles away. That's what will happen. I think it's just that connectivity will continue. I think that's a really good thing. But how about yourself?
I mean, I absolutely agree with everything you've just said, Chris. I think the pandemic was such a huge disruption to normality or perceived normality at the time. It really catapulted everything into question. So we are now asking ourselves that whether the choices we made pre-pandemic, whether that is to do with how we spend our money or where and how we shop, what we choose to spend our time doing, who we spend it with, we're all asking ourselves, I guess, were we making the right choices? So to your point, Chris, convenience, you know, if there's an easier way for me, or is there an option that means more convenience? Like, ultimately, what are the changes that I can make that will leave me happier in this new normal world? And I think what we define as happiness has changed. Our definition of value is different. And this absolutely affects every single decision we make. So, you know, this point around purpose is so true. Like, we want our choices to stand for something. Because our decisions reflect who we are. And I think we're becoming collectively more purpose-led. So I think purpose is a huge theme for me that I think will stay and something that I think will grow. I also think there is this, there's a feel of embracing change that wasn't as prevalent pre-pandemic. I think there was a lot of acceptance and stagnation pre-pandemic. We were sort of okay with things as they were because it was just the way that things had always been. And I think now we know things don't have to stay the same. So they won't stay the same. So standing still and acceptance, we recognize them as bad. They're bad for individuals, they're bad for society, and they're bad for business. So I think the future holds change. And I think this notion of being static has disappeared, and really a world that embraces and encourages change to be a better world is ahead of us. And I absolutely expect that, you know, this concept of brands acting on our behalf will stay. We want them to stand up for the things we believe in, and we want them to be driving change, positive change. And I actually think I think that's the key to brand resilience. So I'm going to go with purpose and change is my key future trends.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's good. Well, that's it from us too. And thank you for listening. And hopefully next year is going to be a lot less meh and a lot more amazing.
That's been great, guys. Thank you. And thanks to all our listeners for joining today's episode of Connected. We'll be back again in 2 weeks. Remember to subscribe, and you can check out our website for more information on any of the topics we discuss at merkelink.com. We look forward to you joining us next time. Catch you soon.